Welcome to the Agile Wire, brought to you by Wisconsin Agility. We want you to get agile and stay agile. Now here are your hosts, Jeff Bubbles and Chad Beyer.
And we're recording. All right, kick us off, Jeff.
All right, we have Johanna Rothman on the podcast. If you listened to the last episode, you know Johanna was just on. So we have one topic. We just talked about her latest book, Successful Independent Consulting, but now we want to dive into a different topic. We want to jump into how do you know what product to build? Like, how do you know what people really want? So Johanna, how do you get started when answering that question?
So I think that there's similarities and differences if you're independent or consulting, where you're selling services and maybe information products, although I really hate to think of a workshop as an information product, but it is, right? It is, and consulting and coaching really is. And I think I've been talking with a bunch of consultants as I've been promoting the book, and some people have what I consider to be an interesting business plan that I don't think is going to match reality. So I asked them, do you have three people you can name who want this thing that you want to offer? Hmm. And if you can name three people whom you can name, I mean, it's really that specific, right? Jeff wants this thing. Chad also talked to me the other week about this thing. Johanna said, yeah, I really want that thing. Now you probably have an offering that makes sense. But if you cannot name three people, three is not quite a random number, but it's a reasonable number. Because if three mm-hmm. people want it, chances are good more people also want it. Now, that's how I start from the consulting perspective. From a mass market perspective, it's a little bit different. A startup is also a little bit different. And enterprise products are also different. And that's why we need many, many ways to think about what is something we could offer and in a product, and how do we know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. You first asked that question before we were recording. I was like, how am I going to answer this? My first thought was like, well, it starts with pain, right? Like in like some problem somebody's having. So like if you can identify, hey, I'm frustrated with this. Are anyone else frustrated with this problem? And if you can find some people that are frustrated with it, maybe you have something there. I mean, especially from a consulting product, like, I don't know, from a workshop standpoint, we don't just build workshops that we don't have clients for usually. Usually it's somebody like comes up and says, hey, I have this problem. Can you help me with this? And we haven't built it yet. We're like, heck yeah, we can do that. Like, we'll just take piece from this, this, and this. We'll merge it together and then we'll think of some more ideas. Yeah, we can do that for sure. And then we build it for somebody else. And then when somebody else comes with a similar problem, like, we do have that workshop ready and here's some more details about it. And we're ready to give it to that next person, right? So I think from a consulting standpoint, let your customers drive what you build. Don't just overbuild something because you'll never sell it. I don't know. You find the same thing.
Yeah, as a consultant, I offer syllabuses on my website. No client has ever bought that specific syllabus. And I say I'm happy to customize a workshop with you, and because we get into what their problems are. But this is why a custom product, especially as a consultant, is so different from a mass market product.
Yeah. So how do you approach the mass market? So you get the mass market, you want to build something that everybody can use.
Well,
where do you start there?
So I'm not going to say everybody. So you two are gentlemen. You probably don't know about beige shoes. When I was growing up, my mother used to say, beige shoes are a neutral color. They go with everything. So she made me buy a pair of beige pumps. Right, pumps are the slide-in shoes with a little heel on the back. Beige shoes go with nothing. They go with nothing because they're beige. Nobody wants beige. They want red. They want purple. They want black. They might even want navy or brown. They don't want beige. And that's the problem if you build it for everyone. If you build it for everyone, they might come if it's a baseball diamond. They're not sure. going to come for a product. So while we say mass market, we must talk about our personas. Yep. Who are our ideal customers for this product? Now, if you're doing something mm-hmm. for kids, I'm a grandmother, which is a very exciting time in my life and also exhausting for my daughter and her husband. But when people want to sell me on a child's toy, it might be the same as selling the parent, but they will reach me differently, right? So mm-hmm. I have a different problem than my daughter and her husband have. So we took our kids on a little vacation in May where there was a pool. The 2.5-year-old loves the pool. I found little balls that were at least reasonable for a 2.5-year-old, because 2.5-year-olds like to tear apart everything. I swear I should just give him the pill bottles I cannot open. He would be able to open them. It's just nuts. So I found these little balls on Amazon, and I bought them, and I said to my daughter, I'm not sure if these are right. He loved them, right? I spent, you know, 10 minutes looking, 5 minutes buying and getting them. I did not know I had the problem of bringing a little tiny present to our vacation. But he loved them, and it was all fabulous. That's the problem with the mass market product, right? Who needs this? How do you get their attention?
And then you can target by persona, right? Like, I think that's the thing, right? So, you know, we talk about, like, in some of our product level classes about unrealized value. And it's too often people are, you know, focused on like time to market, or they're focused on like current value and feature usage and daily active users, whatever it might be. But they don't realize like there's an adjacent market right here next to your product. You just gotta go after them. Like, you don't need to build new features, maybe. You just need to like present it in a different way that this other whole segment's gonna jump on your product. Or maybe it's one more feature or one more integration or whatever it might be. But I think that's a huge, you know, source of new revenue, new income for products, right? And so, I don't know, like, where do those ideas come from? A lot of times, I think they just come from, like, conversations or something like, if it just did this, I could use it. Or what if we had this target group, you know, using our thing? But the problem that I see in a lot of organizations is they think they know and they don't test it first, right? So I don't...
Yeah.
Have you done that before where you're like, I think this market segment's good, we're going to go all in on this, and then like nobody buys it?
Anytime I hear all in, I really worry. All in is a trigger phrase for me. And that's because in the mid-O's, everyone, in quotes, was going all in, quotes, on agile transformations. And look at how many organizations are truly agile now. Yep. Not enough. Mm-hmm. So when I have been changing my wording about a lot of things to do with product, I acknowledge that people have various titles in their organizations, such as product manager or product owner or even business analyst. And I say in my workshops, all of you are product leaders. That means you lead discovering and focusing on the business value of the product. The product development team focuses on delivering that business value so everyone can assess it. And if we're not talking to customer support or customer satisfaction, whatever those people are named who get the phone calls, the people who get the phone calls and the emails, right? Those people. And if we're not talking to specific customers at some point in time, we are leaving revenue on the table. because it might be right adjacent, as you said. We might need to do the thing that you folks talked about with Chris Lucassen, that 3x3 thing. I'm still learning about that and integrating it into my head. We might need to do an impact map by Gorko Ajic. I hope I didn't destroy Gorka's name. I probably did. But we need to think about the customer not as this monolithic human, but that we have almost all products have the difference between the customer and the buyer and possibly the user, and then which users are we going after and which customers will buy. And it's actually a very, very big deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've used the 3x3. So it's really a storytelling framework for sort of fulfilling that vision piece that any product leader, I guess, we'll use that phrase, would use, right? And what we found is it helps us articulate, like, kind of when we are backing into a new workshop we're creating. Well, we kind of have a subset of personas in mind that they need this workshop. There's a problem statement. And then we start crafting by using that 3x3 where you describe the status quo. I'll run through it quickly for listeners. So it's a 9-box, 3x3, 9 boxes to fill out. And it's kind of like if you've ever gone to a startup pitch event or like Shark Tank, it's similar to that. You're pitching why somebody should care about this product that's solving a problem. And so it goes through status quo, observations, story, an insight, an opportunity, an analogy, a solution, an advantage of that solution, and then ethos, which is kind of that emotional connection at the end. Set up. And like we've kind of done this with our workshops. So when we create a new workshop, we're sort of like, okay, who really needs this? What's the status quo right now? We have a product backlog refinement workshop. And when we sort of backed into that, we kept finding that all our clients, they really struggled with like keeping their backlog in good shape. And as we thought, it's like, well, it's not just the product owner's problem. It's the whole team's problem. The only reason we have a backlog is so that the people doing the work can get to shared understanding and then go build it, right? Value add activity. So we were like, this is really a team workshop. We need to target a team, right? And so that's kind of, we back into it. And what I love about the 3x3 is it just gives you this easy kind of scripted guide and you just fill in the pieces. And if it doesn't sound great the first time, you swap some pieces in, you change it out. But then what was easy is that when it's time to build sort of the description of the workshop or a client's like, hey, can you tell me about that workshop? You can just go pull from that 3x3 script that you had. Or if someone's at a conference, you can literally kind of like organically tell the story because you've already, you know, by writing it once, it's in your brain somewhere and you kind of just reveal the pitch. So that's how we've used it. We've also worked with some startup companies actually building products and services, scrum teams, and we've used it with them sort of as stakeholders to help guide the, you know, guide the vision. So anyway, if anyone isn't familiar with it, it's from originally from Chris Lucassen's Product Samurai book, but it also shows up in the most recent book he wrote with Robin Sherman.
The Practical Product Manager.
Practical Product Management for Product Owners. And then, of course, we talk about it in all the Scrum.org product owner courses as well. Well, the Advanced Product Owner course specifically. But yeah, so I don't know. I went off on a big rant there, Johanna, but I know we'd exchanged a few emails on the 3x3 and we hadn't really had a chance to talk about it. So, we it's great that we can talk about it on the podcast and maybe help others get some value from it too. But that's how we've used it.
And what I see a lot in my clients is they think they need to do everything now. And that's what I find really valuable about Gorko's impact mapping. There's a website, impactmapping.org. So you can, it's all open source. You can see all of it. And I find that we can, and this is different from Jeff Patton's user, what is it? What is
user
the name
story
of the
mapping.
Book? Thank you.
Use the story mapping.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Okay. I did have it right. Yeah. I mean, there are tons of ways to really think about this, but I find that Goyko's approach with impact mapping really helps me bring home to the client, you don't need all of this. You might not need any of this part for a year or more. Do not start to write stories about it. Instead, really go in deep on the stuff that will matter now. And that's the stuff that matters now. This is why we need discovery and delivery all the time. The feedback loops need to be fast. And I'm writing a life cycles book right now where I'm talking about how not all iterative and incremental approaches are literally agile approaches. But if they get you the fast feedback cycles and the faster decisions, you don't need to worry about creating an agile culture that revolves around flow efficiency thinking, because so many organizations are so stuck on cost accounting, they cannot get out of their own way. I can talk until I'm blue in the face. I can say resource efficiency is wasting time, and they might all agree with me, and they cannot change. So instead of faux agile, F-A-U-X, right, fake agile, I really want people to think about iterative and incremental approaches that will get them most of the way there, and then we can stop talking about agile transformations. Because until we change cost accounting, we don't have to talk about agile transformations. So let's just stop there. Okay. I went off on a rant. Sorry.
That's great. I'm glad we got that in there. That it needs to be said over and over again.
Yeah.
But it's great, right? Like that fast feedback loop, that's really what matters. I mean, we say this phrase all the time when we're, talks everywhere, like our courses, our workshops. It's like, we want to move from an analysis mindset to a feedback mindset. It's all about that build, measure, learn feedback loop. How fast can we do that? And the longer we do it, the more risk we take. So let's just mitigate that risk. That's just good business. So I bet you people have a hard time saying no to that. It's like, who doesn't want to mitigate risk and increase the value delivery? Like, it's pretty hard to go against that. So, yeah, I think that's a great approach. You know, and that's a lot of times what we try to get teams to is like, let's just deliver. Like, I don't know. Everything in your backlog is assumed value until you actually release it, right? And so, when you release it, now you have an opportunity to learn from it, right? So, like, that's really a hard concept for a lot of organizations to wrap their head around. And so that's how you get that feedback loop that you're talking about. Like, you got to release and you got to measure and you got to learn.
It's so if you strip away everything, Scrum, Kanban, Lean, just all of the stuff that we've been working on for decades, rebranding, coming up with new names. At the end of the day, what are you trying to do? Why are you trying to do it? Obviously, who you're trying to do it for, and then just try to find the cheapest way to see if you can move the mark, right? And that's why I like the impact mapping. I like anything that lives in the why state. There's so many product backlogs around this planet that have a bunch of tasks and solutions in them, and they have missed the why. And all you got to do, right, when you have a fresh set of eyes on it, you're like, oh, this isn't even a product backlog. This is just a task list. We ask why 5 times. Find out who it's for, and then find the cheapest way to move the mark on that. And isn't that, whatever you call that, I don't care. That's good business, right? But man, have so many organizations caught the disease of keeping people busy. And keeping people busy is not good business, period. You know, we're just moving through the motions.
Well, and the other podcast that we just finished recording, you, Chad, talked about time to read. You could not have done that without Slack in your system. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important to have Slack in our systems. How do we make time to do all those little chores that are not somehow affiliated with the user story? We can disregard the fact that they probably should be affiliated with the user story, but they're not. So if the team sees this as something different, how do we keep our environment clean? I will not talk about my office because, yeah, I have books everywhere. But my hard drive is organized, right? Everything about my work environment when I'm working is organized and ready for me to work as soon as I walk into my office and sit down. And I think that there are way too many teams who say, I can't release because I need to depend on somebody else, or I don't have access to the testing environment or some other. Really, it looks like a small problem to management, and it's huge. It's huge. So you can have all the backlogs you want, and you can know the why, but if people cannot get to actually doing the work and delivering some value, oh, it's so, so frustrating.
Yep. Yeah, so much wait time also just exists, right, in every organization, all due to dependencies. That's probably a whole other episode we could go into, right? Organizational structure and systems thinking, but, you know, we can't solve all the problems.
I was going to add in, like, we've done a talk in the past, and we say this a lot, like, you got to do operational agile well before we can think about strategic agility.
Yeah.
And what we mean by that is we kind of hit on actually the items. First thing is like align around a broad product definition, something people actually care about that you deliver, like not a component like QA or architecture or like an application that then just feeds into another integration that feeds into something else. Like it's got to be something, solve some problem in the world. Then you have to have all the skills on a team to solve whatever problems that they're this product ahead now has, and you got to deliver often. If you do those three things, you're in a good place to have that feedback loop that we just talked about. And now you have an opportunity to do amazing stuff. But until you get those three things down, I don't know. It's a really, really hard battle. Like you're making it way harder than it needs to be.
Well, I have a feedback loops talk that I will send to you later about talking for your meetup. But it talks about feedback loops in the team, and that as often as the team can deliver, now the product strategy and the project portfolio people can decide, do we want to readdress the strategy for either the product or the portfolio? And the more often they can re-choose or re-decide means the organizational strategy can change. But it all starts with the team. So anything we can do to help the team understand what are we doing and why, right? Which goes to why this product, for whom, why now, what is the value we can get out of it to serve our customers? So they buy more. So we have more customers. So we have, right, all those really good reinforcing loops, because we need to make money. That's how it goes.
Yep. Yeah, we were just saying that this week, right? We always like to talk about the cost of a Scrum team. And like, again, like we kind of started this out on product leader and what to build. But like, if you don't have the cost of what your team, you know, if you don't know that cost, you're making decisions without that. And that's not good. And if you do know the cost, every time an iteration goes by where you didn't make an impact, you didn't have an outcome, that's like, okay, the money's gone. It got magically deposited in everybody's checking accounts, right? Like, let's walk into the parking lot, dump the cash in a barrel and light it on fire. Can't get that money back. And the organization kind of got a bad deal, right? Like, I care deeply about employees, but it is an agreement between an employee and an employer. And if you are an owner, you care deeply about how much your payroll cost is and what you get for that, right? And in other words, the ROI on the employee. I hope that doesn't sound too harsh and capitalist, but it's the reality. So every team, hopefully, especially the product people, should be thinking, what did I get for the last iteration? Because the money's gone.
So this is why I'm so insistent on measuring cycle time.
Yeah.
Right. I ask the product leader, or the Scrum Master, or, you know, whatever facilitative leadership there is in the team to measure cycle time for every single feature, because I guarantee you the salary cost is way lower than the wait time.
Yep.
Right? The yep. wait time is so much larger. Well, unless you start to measure cycle time on a regular basis, right? The wait time is so long. You could pay four teams to do nothing except support this one team to make this impact with this product, right? I have actually done that. Before I knew about cycle time, I guess I kind of had a lean edge to my thinking very early on. And one of my managers back in the 80s, I didn't have a full team available. A couple of people were on vacation. One woman was out on maternity leave. But I did have a team struggling to finish a given product. So I said to these other three people, you're not going to be my orphans. You're going to work to support this team. And I realize you're developers. Nobody ever likes support, in quotes, when you're a developer. But I would really like you to do this because here's the difference it will make for us as a company and for the users of this product. And they said, fine, Johanna, we'll do this. And then they realized how much fun it was to actually help that other team move faster. Yep. And we actually got that product out earlier, which meant we did not have a cost of delay, which meant other people bought it. And my boss tried to give me a bonus based on releasing early. And I said, I didn't do the work. Right. My husband wished I'd take that bonus, but it was not mine. It was the team's.
Yep.
So I think it's really important to say, where do we apply money strategically to improve our fast feedback cycles?
Yeah. You know, we always talk about making the hidden visible, because I think the problem here is this was solved decades ago in manufacturing, right? Like if you walk the factory floor, like Eli Goldratt's book, The Goal, right? You walk the factory floor and you see piles of inventory, you can add up that cost pretty easily and you can put a dollar value on it. And also you see it. It's like literally in the physical world. With knowledge work, we don't see it, but we all know it's there, right? Like we just described. So here's a product idea. Maybe what we need is something where you plug in the cost of your Scrum team. Okay, now we have that. And then as it measures cycle time, every feature, you got a little dashboard screen, you click it, and it just converts it to dollars immediately. And so as the time is ticking by, cycle time, you just watch the dollars on a feature go up and up, right? And so everyone in the organization has access to it. We still don't have to know everyone's individual salaries. We just have the cost of the team, and we can calculate. Look at this. This feature has stretched across three iterations. Here's the cost of it at this point. Like, I feel like when you have it right in someone's face, like the dollars, it might kind of have a chance at making it visible, and maybe people would care more. I don't know. Somebody should go build that product.
I'm gonna say no, because
use
I think
evil?
That too many managers. I think too many managers would blame the team, not the That's wait right. states. Right. What really counts is the cost of the wait states.
Yep.
And too many electronic systems. Tools do not allow us to track the wait states and what we are waiting for. So I'm all in with you if we can track the cost of the waiting.
Absolutely. Let's
not
do
the
it.
Cost of the feature. Yeah.
That's what we'll do. We'll build the product to only track wait.
Yeah. Yeah. That would make sense to me. Because then that really gets the aging idea front and center into people's minds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, this was fun. I don't know. I had a blast. These are some topics that are really fun for Jeff and I to chat about. So I hope you enjoyed the conversation as well.
I did. Thank you.
Any other things to plug? We're kind of come from this product conversation, but anything else you want to plug at the end of this episode?
So I'm not sure when this will go out, but my life cycles book will probably be out by then. So I don't have the real name. I have not yet published it on LeanPub. I am so unsure about Lean publishing, because I iterate through the entire book as I write it. So for me, publishing early is not always a good thing. So I really have to think about it. But by the time this goes out, I will have that book out also.
Awesome.
Awesome. We should, when it goes out, we'll read it and maybe we can chat about that in another time. That'd be fun.
All right. Sounds good. Cool.
If you found value in today's episode, share this with a friend. Until next time, get agile and stay agile.